The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Thursday edition of The Drive. A beautiful day. A little bit warmer today, but man, what a nice May day it has been. So hopefully everybody doing well. Getting ready for the weekend. Mm-hmm. Feels like the start of the weekend because we have a big baseball series getting underway in about 3 hours.
Would you say spring has sprung
in the Auburn Athletic area? Oh, yes. I think so. We're back in the 80s now. Yeah. Yeah, it feels like it. Everything, including, seems like a second burst of pollen is in bloom
still
now.
Still some pretty cool nights,
yeah.
Right?
I mean,
it
yeah,
still gets
like
into
that.
The, yeah, I mean,
that.
I think tomorrow there's a low in the high 40s, low 50s.
It's going to be 52, I think, or something tonight.
Should be gorgeous baseball weather tonight at Plainsman Park for Auburn and Georgia as they get started. And you can hear that on Wings 94.3 a little bit later on.
Mm-hmm. Yep, 6:45 airtime, 7 o'clock first pitch tonight from Sanford Stadium, Hitchcock Field at Plainsman Park. A lot going on. They will I don't know which day, if it will be today, tonight, or Sunday. Maybe Sunday when they'll honor the seniors. So, I mean, it's a big weekend.
Saturday.
Though. I mean,
so Thursday,
Saturday, yeah, my bad.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Yeah, either tonight or Saturday when they would honor the seniors.
Don't want to confuse people like
no,
we
no,
did.
No. Come back Sunday to congratulate the seniors. No, that's okay. I mean, you can do that, but I don't know if they'll be there. But
like,
yeah,
lay a rose.
Josh Donaldson ceremony will be tomorrow, and then Saturday the home press radio booth.
Yeah, how about that?
Will be. Named in honor of Rod Bramblett.
Yeah, well deserved, and such a cool honor, and something you know we've been saying for years, like something's got to be named after the Bramblets somewhere, mm-hmm. And yeah, the baseball press box feels very appropriate as something that will bear his name for the foreseeable future, and that should be a really special dedication. Is that Saturday?
That's Saturday.
That's Saturday mm-hmm. too. So probably the seniors.
That's what I'm thinking. Maybe tonight.
They might do the seniors on Saturday too. I mean,
for their last regular season home game.
I guess you could do it tomorrow if you wanted to. Like tomorrow night pregame is sort of the last like Friday night of the year. What a season, and wrapping it up with an important. We talked about like I wondered earlier in the week, like both teams seem like top eights. Like what's at stake? I think
more maybe – this is crazy. More maybe at stake for Georgia than for Auburn.
Although –
Even though Georgia is the SEC champ, they wrapped it up last weekend.
And we've said, like, you know, if Auburn were to – you know, if Georgia were to take all three this weekend, then it's like, okay, well
– But Auburn's RPI and strength of schedule is not going to drop. They're gonna be in the top three in both. Regardless of what happens here over the next few ball games,
the thing that makes me nervous is what would the committee do with a team on a, especially
if you lose first game of the conference,
if you lose in the conference, you're talking about a team on a 5-game losing streak going into the postseason. Like it would be an overreaction to use that to move Auburn out of the top eight. Right now, Baseball America's got Auburn number three, and I think a lot of the other projections have them in that same ballpark. So yeah, it would be a like to move out of the top eight completely for Auburn would represent a pretty significant slide. And I agree with you, like the computer numbers indicate.
Yeah, my bold prediction: they're not going to lose. They're not going to lose their next four ball games.
No.
I mean, they have too much pitching, and the hitting has been fine, and they're at home here for the next three. So yeah, I think that's going to happen. Oh, I just reminded too that the K Corner. Is honoring
right.
Brother Man, he's in town. He's in
oh,
town here
oh,
for
is
the
that
final
right?
series. Yes,
okay.
Indeed.
Well, that needs to be you know near the top of the
oh,
list
absolutely.
Too. So congratulations. And Josh Donaldson, you know, bringer of rain, getting honored mm-hmm. as well. And Andy mentioned like among the cool things about Josh Donaldson, not just that he had one of the more prominent major league careers of anyone who ever played at Auburn. And he came to Auburn as a shortstop, left as a catcher.
Yeah.
Right.
Was drafted as a catcher.
Was drafted as a catcher, ends up being an impactful power bat, winning an MVP award in his pro career. He's also
won a gold glove at third, if I'm not mistaken, as well as being an MVP.
He's also somebody, and if you choose not to be in this category, like, that's your prerogative, but it's really cool to see an athlete who had a very productive major league career and then prioritizes giving back to the school where he played his college sports. And Josh Donaldson, Andy talked about it earlier in the week.
Oh, yeah.
Josh Donaldson.
The Performance Center is something that, yeah. Josh Donaldson is responsible for.
He's able to dig deep, and he dug deep to help Auburn advance some of the facilities in baseball.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So a lot going on this weekend over at the ballpark. It is Thursday, and
you know what that means.
Yep, we are joined by Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Ferg, how you doing, man?
I'm all right. How are y'all?
Doing pretty well. I mean, it seems like, it's sort of a slow time, but there's still a lot going on.
And it's a big week at the Observer. I mean, yeah. with Justin publishing a two-part sit-down interview with Auburn men's basketball head coach Stephen Pearl. Is that the first one-on-one with an Auburn head coach in Observer history?
Yes.
Is that the first time?
No, that I've published, yeah.
Yeah, see, that's a really cool moment, and I thought some really interesting information from Stephen in the...
I have not had a chance to check that out yet.
It is worth your time if you get the chance to check out, and we'll have Justin talk about some of the highlights,
mm-hmm.
But it is worth your time. It's worth a subscription to check out, especially if you're interested in the short-term and long-term future of Auburn men's basketball, to hear what Stephen Pearl had to say in his conversation with Justin Ferguson. That's a cool thing for Auburn University to help set up as well to provide Stephen Pearl. But like, what were your big takeaways from your conversation with Coach?
Yeah, it was really, I was not surprised. I should say, but a little bit, like, not totally surprised about how honest Stephen Pearl was in forthcoming about kind of their approach from year one to year two, what changed, what needed to be changed, what they felt like they were able to get done in the transfer portal. And then, gave some real deep insight on Todd Pettiford's decision to come back, that process, just kind of what that back and forth was like. He talked about the guys they lost and just, how you have to handle that as a head coach. Talking about managing a budget when it comes to, rebuilding a roster year in and year out, what they want to do moving forward roster-wise. We talked scheduling, dug deep into the two bigs that Auburn brought in, the two centers, I should say. And I think one of the most fascinating things he said was, I just asked him, like, what did he learn most from year one as a head coach? And his answer was basically, he was like, you can go a lot of different ways with that. But the thing that stood out to him the most is they went into this transfer portal after looking at what happened last season. They went into this transfer portal, and he said, we needed more guys that he called solids, like solid in their approach, in being a teammate, and how they, how they go about their work. He says this program has been built on guys like Dylan Carwell and Chaney Johnson and Denver Jones and Jared Harper and Horace Spencer was just some of the names he threw out there. He said, I needed more of those guys like that, personality wise. He said maybe not in terms of character, but characteristics. Like, he needed guys with that kind of background to him, and so he shouted out Thomas Dow, Bukia Boye, George Kimball. When they went into the transfer portal, it was like it goes beyond just getting dudes who are talented at basketball, and that was something that he felt like between that and bringing back a guy like Kevin Overton and bringing back a guy like Todd Pettiford, they feel like they've got, Simon Walker and Blake Michalak as well. They feel like they've got guys that – I think personality, chemistry-wise, that's the thing that stuck out to them the most. Like, they needed to get some on-court things sealed up for sure. They're bigger. They're longer. They're older. They're better shooters than they had in the roster last year.
Maybe more defensively minded.
Yes. And
they will see them.
But he said the big thing for him was that they went out and tried to find guys that he felt like showed a lot of the same attributes as some of the best players. And not just their best star players, but some of the best culture guys, glue guys that have been, you know, the foundation of championship teams. It was a very, very honest answer. I was not expecting all that.
Well, I mean, it is important. I mean, all-star teams can look really impressive, but just because you have talent doesn't mean the guys are going to be able to play together.
And he was quick to say it wasn't like – he wasn't saying that, like, the last year's team didn't have that at all, but he said he felt like they needed more of it. And so, you know, when you go get some of the guys they got out of the transfer portal – they did so with a mind to, okay, who, you know, do these guys fit what we want from our players on and off the floor, you know, in terms of building a team and having the chemistry that they really felt like they didn't have last season. One of the things we talked about today in part two that you can check out, I asked him about the value of the trip that they go to Greece later in the year, and he made a point that had not really clicked with me until he said it. He said, look, we need this team to spend as much time as they can together. He said last year's team did not get that. You had too many injuries, guys jumping in and out of the lineup.
Lot of talk about chemistry from the Armour coaches, like the importance of getting that locker room on the same page.
Todd Pettiford went deep with the NBA draft process, and he was kind of a later arrival between – Filip Jovic was a late arrival as well. Like, so what they did was he said he felt like this team never really got – that kind of bond,
and there was a coaching change.
He said even before that, you didn't feel like they had that bond and that kind of chemistry on and off the floor that had defined the team for the previous year, that had defined some of the best teams that they'd had together.
They seem to, I think that, you know, even dating back to the Bruce Pearl days, like this staff seems to admire climbing the ladder from the mid-major ranks and what it takes and some of the guys that they've pulled that way, and I think they're
understanding and earning your way up.
And they've had success with some.
And why not? I mean, you know, you just look at the national champion this year. Their best player was a dude who was a UAB. you can find that value in a lot of those players. The best player you've ever had came from Morehead State. So,
and I think with last year's team, like there was a because we've talked about it. Like there was a vision. There was an idea of sort of a really deep, high-powered, offensive-minded team, and then the more pieces that had to get pulled away from that for one reason or another,
I asked him, one of the things I asked Steven was, like, do you feel like you guys are closer this year with this roster to your vision of what you want this team to be year in and year out? And he said, I think we're bigger, I think we're older, I think we're better shooters, I think we're deeper. He said, but we had confidence in last year's team. We just didn't have the depth, and then so many things kind of hit against them.
When everyone was healthy and available, I think they maybe thought last year's team.
He pointed out, like, you never expected that, like, you know, Abdul-Bashir never was healthy when he got here. Emeka Oporam has his health issue, and, you know, that's completely unforeseen. You have a situation where I wouldn't count Magwood with that, but
I think they were counting on him. I mean, it's not injury per se. I think they went into the season thinking Magwood was going to play some minutes, right? I mean, it wasn't
sure. I mean, yeah, but I don't think that was as big of a like Keyshawn Murphy being hurt as much as he was.
Although they lamented
Simon Walker hurt for most of the summer. Yep. And then all that happens, you get a couple guys get off to slow starts. Combined with the fact you're playing a brutal schedule, and it's just like it never really, really got going. You know, and he mentions in that interview, we were plenty capable. Should have been an NCAA tournament team. We weren't. So now it's like, okay, why weren't we, and how do you fix that? And so if you're looking for kind of insight of that interview, there's a lot to it where kind of the bits and pieces of where they feel like they've gotten better and what they are, like what they prioritized and why they think they think they've got a team that can take that bounce back season next year, and you know, go to the NCAA tournament again and get back to, you know, what Auburn basketball expects to be year in and year out.
You better with 76 teams.
Yeah, and that was and that's brought up as well. I mentioned, you know, and there's like, you go to the NIT this year and you're put in a unique situation. I was like, there's probably never going to be a team that's going to be in that situation.
The last SEC NIT champion.
Yeah, very well. Maybe the last SEC NIT team.
Maybe.
I mean, who knows? He, but, uh, But, yeah, I mean, obviously the key is that, and that's something you couldn't do anything about last year, is keeping enough players where you can play. I mean, because you're right. I mean, when Auburn,
they feel a lot
when
more
Auburn had
their
eight,
depth.
Nine guys last year, we saw they could compete with anybody.
I mean, I think right now if you look at this team coming into next season, you know, you're looking at a situation where you have Tahai Pettiford, Kevin Overton, you go get Thomas Dowd and Adam Olson, and you get the two centers in Bukia Boye and Narcisse Ngoi. You get Owen Freeman. You bring back Simon Walker. You bring back Blake Michalak. Well, there's nine right there of guys that
are they going to add another?
Feel like I'm and they are going to add another. They are going to add another. Mm-hmm. I don't have a ton of detail that I can say like publicly what's going on there, but I will. I can tell you that Auburn is deep in the process of adding another wing. Sometimes some guys take longer than you think. There's different reasons for that. So I can't. Yeah,
you're pretty sure they're not done. Like
I am confident they're not done, and I'm pretty confident in who they're going to add. Yeah. It's just not not official yet.
Is it someone we've talked about previously?
Well, that wouldn't be a shock. Oh, I got an update on one thing before we get to our first break here. Seniors are going to be honored with their parents and a jersey presentation tonight.
Oh, very cool.
Saturday they will receive diplomas from President Roberts, including Sonny DeShera.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. So that's what's going on. So there's a lot going on all weekend at baseball.
Yeah, congratulations to the families tonight, and congratulations to the graduating seniors on Saturday. Congratulations to our pal Sonny.
Yeah.
And
first base coach Sonny DeShera.
And Dr. Roberts likes to that's a part of his job. He appreciates.
Well, he is not uninterested in sports. Yeah. Let's put it that way.
Already had seats. Absolutely. He already had seats at these things. He got better seats when he became the president, right?
Yeah, but
he,
that works that way. All right, let's get to our first break of the show.
It's good to be the king, right?
Absolutely. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar as we're just getting underway here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Pack on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. So some really cool info there from Justin's one-on-one with Auburn basketball coach Stephen Pearl.
And again, congratulations, Justin, on landing the exclusive. And shout out to the folks at Auburn for making a coach available.
And, yeah, I mean, I said it like Stephen's pretty busy this time of year. They were going to go see Keyshawn Hall at the Combine this week. They got recruiting going on. So, I mean, but he still sat down. I mean, we talked for an hour the other day.
What do you say really cool. When people ask about Keyshawn Hall's pro prospects? Because, like, that's a super tough thing to evaluate, for anyone these days.
Yeah, he is an older guy. He's a good scorer. He's a good one-on-one scorer. I think people are going to, if you're trying to take a second-round flyer on a guy that you want to see what he's got, he definitely can put the ball in the basket really well and has got, like, some of that kind of matchup versatility where he is a big guard. You know, he's quicker if you put bigs on him, and you know, he's got some big man stuff that he can do if you put a wing or a guard on him. So it'll be very interesting to see he's obviously got skills that make sense, like at the next level. If you're looking at a second round pick and you want to take a flyer on somebody, why not a kid that has proven to be a really good scorer in college basketball at multiple levels?
I'm not good at predicting like what college players are going to make the jump successfully to the NBA. Although we did talk about Dylan last year as a guy who did certain things at an NBA level that aren't prioritized during the draft, but that team could, a team looking for rim protection, outside of they could find something. With Key, I do wonder, I don't know, if a team was playing like run and gun, five out basketball, can Keyshawn Hall be you know, one of those like corner three options, you know, for a team like that. Like I don't know, like it's an interesting question. I kind of think it's probably going to end like not in the NBA for him. Like it could be professional basketball.
He'll be playing somewhere professionally though. Yeah. I'm sure that, you know, Ferg, I'm interested, really interested. I'm sure you asked SP about this, but the situation now when you're recruiting highly touted high school players, I mean, that's the thing that can be so painful is you invest a lot of time and a lot of money getting those guys, and then they can be gone just like that after 1 year.
Yeah, I believe, I mean, I asked him in the, you know, in the wake of losing, I guess Phillip technically counts with that, but Sway as well. Mm. You know, and obviously Elijah Freeman wasn't straight out of high school, but was coming from the D2 level.
A 1 year guy that you thought you'd have for more than a year.
And I asked him about that, and he was like, you know, the best quote I think he had on that was, is like, it's just how it is. Now he's like, don't ever stop caring. You don't ever stop trying, but you should never be surprised.
I just wondered if after, you know, once burned, twice shy, that kind of thing, does it make you,
look at it this way. You go and get a guy like Sway and you want him for multiple years. He was a really good prospect coming out of high school, and you don't keep him. Meanwhile, you're about to get the third year to Hyde Pettiford, which you probably didn't think was going to happen. So I think it's just, every situation's a little different, but yeah, I mean, it is one of those things where it's like you got to keep doing that. Now he made an interesting point that moving forward, his goal is to bring back at least four guys who played for you. If you can do that
every
year, if you can do that every year, you're going to be ahead of the curve in college basketball.
I agree.
And this year they're
bringing back like an equivalent of three. If you count what you got from Michelle, like what you got from Walker as a third.
And if the 5-for-5 passes as expected, you could have several years of eligibility from guys that are nominally seniors right now.
Oh, KO, yeah.
Thomas Dowd.
KO, Thomas Dowd. Oh, Olson. Freeman.
Yeah. These are all guys that right now.
I think Olson. I don't know what Olson's deal is.
I thought Olson was also, but yeah, he might have it.
I don't know what
he's
his, an old, I don't know, he's Canadian.
Because it was 2 years at
Canada.
Saint something.
Yeah.
But he might be an older guy because he's foreign, right? Like that's also the belief that we'll see if the age limit.
Like a way kind of prep school thing.
Yeah.
You know,
impacts him.
But that's all right because he's been in school, so he's okay.
Auburn is, I can say Auburn is preparing to bring back a lot of these guys after next season. Now, obviously you want to get through this season and see what it looks like, but you know, they are looking at it with the thought of we want to bring a lot of these guys back. And to do that, you're going to have money. And that was another thing he mentioned. I asked him about scheduling non-con and like what that looks like moving forward, and just, you know, is it going to be as tough? Is it going to be that? And it wasn't more of a question of, it ended up not being an answer more of like difficulty, strength of schedule. I think, you know, he made it clear that they're still going to prioritize having a good strength of schedule and, you know, helping out your metrics, getting you ready for SEC play like that. But he was talking about now how much they are going to try to supplement their roster budget with these non-con games and neutral sites. Obviously you get that playing in Players Era, but they're going to get that playing in Nashville against Wisconsin, which was officially announced earlier this week. They're going to play a game in Huntsville, supposed to be against Middle Tennessee. That game is also going to be one where you can get that kind of money. And
how does that work?
As far as those games being more beneficial than a home game for NIL?
Because the organizers are paying teams to play in these games, and that money is going toward a roster.
NIL contributions are part of the compensation for those neutrals, like part of what the host is paying the program.
It's funny because sports, but I've heard some people go, well, why didn't Auburn just say, well, all the money from the Baylor game is going to go to NIL? You can't do that when you've got season tickets and university and the obligation.
There is an NIL component to that. That was the big reason why they moved the game.
Absolutely, right. There is.
That is the reason. Yeah.
I mean, because Baylor, Aflac's paying $5 million, guaranteeing Auburn $5 million, and if Auburn sells all their tickets, they're going to get $10 million for NIL.
What Bill's saying, I think, is like if there are fans wondering, well, if the game had stayed at Auburn,
right?
Why can't you just
pool
all
that
money?
Why couldn't we just take what I'm paying for that ticket and have it all go to NIL?
There are still some rules.
That is a question. I was talking to our pal Justin Lee the other day, and he was wondering. He was like, is there a scenario moving forward where a place like Aflac or something like that has these non-conference games, and they can be like, we'll pay you, but like. Could that money stay? Like, could you still have a home game?
It would have to, I think, be in addition to the regular revenue that you have.
Right.
I don't think you
could. Could Aflac sponsor a game at home?
Yeah, I think they could.
And it's like that.
That would be how you could do it.
That would be a win-win.
What would probably happen in that situation?
I think that would be the best case scenario.
It might be. And I know the Duke games on Amazon are neutral site games, you know, in college basketball. But I could see
it's easier to do it. We were talking about this. It's easier to do this for neutral sites in college basketball because usually in the month of December, you're not going to get much home traffic anyway.
Crowd.
But if crowd's not going to be great, so might as well go out on the road and do stuff like this.
But to Justin's point, if a massive corporate sponsor wanted to put their name on the Auburn-Notre Dame series and keep both of those games at home and just say we're the presenting sponsor of the Auburn-Notre Dame two-game series
and
we're going to make
done a, that. I think someone has done that before with a home-and-home, and I can't remember what, like, but I'm blanking
don't,
here.
I don't know exactly yet what the rules would
or
be.
Or it might have been one of those fake home-and-homes.
I don't know if you'd have to clear it with the conference. Yeah. I don't know. You know,
that would be cool.
Like the Alabama-Florida State series going on right now would be one where, in theory, you could have done that like before the game this year and then with the return next year.
He also mentioned that they're going to play an exhibition in Birmingham again, and there's an NIL component of that one as well. So, and I think that event last year with the Hibbett sponsoring that and Bowel, it seemed to do pretty well. So I think that's going to be something they want to continue to bring Auburn and Alabama in there to play other teams.
Was that game internet only last year? You'd love to find a television sponsor for.
I know it's exhibition basketball, but you'd
love to find with the way that these exhibition games have taken hold, and you have like marquee matchups, and the way they feel like regular season games were better.
That Oklahoma State game felt like a regular season game.
Felt like an NCAA tournament game.
Yeah.
Like the way the neutral site was there. I mean, so it's like. The thought of more of those games being on television, I think, is really attractive proposition too, especially if you can get juicy matchups.
Yeah. So, you can check that out at The Observer. A lot of that goes really in-depth on the bigs, really in-depth on the roster build and all that. And I even asked him the most important question of all, is the suit coming back next year? And is he coaching from a stool again next year? And he brought up the fact that the suit – I believe if I'm remembering the numbers,
we need to add a couple of the collection.
I believe it was the suit was 7-2 and the stool was 5-1. He said the suit's definitely staying.
Okay.
Or no, the stool's definitely staying. He's trying to figure out the suit situation. He said Alex Golish told him the other day. He's like, well, you need to do a thing where you wear a different jacket every game. And he looked at Alex and said, I ain't making as much money as you do. Also, we play 30.
Oh, I think he gets
we played 30. We played 38 That's games, right. and y'all, like y'all, y'all playing
we,
the teens.
Hold on, like, but are we to believe Stephen Pearl is buying these suit jackets himself off the rack?
He said, I'm going to need somebody locally to hook me up because. As of right now, it's him, and he had talked about his wife had picked out.
Yeah. So. I mean, surely, like, there's a tailor in the.
There's a couple of names he threw out where it was like, and he even said because the jacket at the semis of the NIT, that's the one with the hood. That I asked about after that game because everybody was like up in arms about it. He mentioned the business locally where he got it from. So, I mean, maybe he's trying to grease the wheels a little bit and get people back in.
And they haven't given Justin anything or he would mention it too.
No, I mean, well, I'm also smart. Like, this is radio. Y'all have advertisers. I don't want to, I'm not stepping on any toes.
I mean, if you have personal brand deals, we're not going to get in the way of.
You see how I dress. I do not have a personal brand deal with any, like menswear.
Fruit of the Loom.
Nah, I ain't got it.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. 25 minutes away from 5 o'clock, just a quarter of the way into the Thursday show. Come on in and join us, 334-321-1390. Anything on your mind, sports-wise, here on the Thursday Drive.
888-281-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. 23 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Thursday.
We recorded a podcast earlier this week. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer joining us here on Thursday, as he does from time to time. We recorded a podcast earlier this week talking about some of the returning talent to the Auburn football team in 2026, because a lot's been made of
some of the
holdovers,
non-newcomers.
Yeah, the guys that were on last year's roster, and a lot of them
60 newcomers, so there are about 30 returnees.
And a lot of those players are class of 25.
An awful lot of sophomores,
especially on defense.
Mm-hmm.
And then the decision to or the retention of Jeremiah Cobb, which just feels gigantic for an offense that's, you know, a lot's new, but to return a running back like Jeremiah Cobb, like you've seen it before, Bill, like when a lot's changed around the Auburn offense, but you bring back that running back who, I mean, I would say Trey Mason. I've used the Ben Tate example of Ben Tate was able to produce in 2008, and then things cleared up around him. A new offense took hold. He stays, and he has a gigantic 2009 season. Trey Mason in 2012 and 2013 is another example of a running back who was able to produce. Well,
Auburn was awful offensively, yet he was still good.
And then what happened when you add
a quarterback that can run like that?
Offense? Yeah, yeah. No, I mean Cobb's a fascinating character because I think he had good numbers last season. He had to do so much. I think he's at his best though when he would be part of a good rotation. You know, to me,
he doesn't need 28 carries.
Yeah, no, he's not.
We talked about that. I mean, he had three games where he had a total of 24, but then he had one game where he had 28. So,
I think if a Jeremiah Cobb game where he, especially with as many snaps as Auburn's going to get this year, if you get a game where you're in the high teens,
I was going to say 15 to 20.
Yeah, no, you're good. You're good for that. And then knowing that you can get, you know, stuff from other guys in there.
Well, Byram's
going to take a lot of carries as well.
That's the other thing to think about. You may, the temptation to use Jeremiah Cobb like a bell cow running back. It's like you have to keep in mind, like if he's going to run 25 or 30 times, how many rushing attempts is Byram Brown going to have?
Yeah,
and then how many snaps in? And then there's, as you said, pretty talalented running back room.
Oh, yeah.
Beyond Jeremy.
You're going to want to get those guys involved.
And the size of the rotations at both running back and receiver sort of open for debate right now and something we don't really like.
No. No, I mean, you can
go back and look at patterns from past from past offenses with Golish, but also it just – I think a lot of that – like we get hung up in that a lot where it's like, how many guys are going to play? And there's – here's how many we may want. But it really comes down to who they can trust.
Yeah, and realistically, like, you know, it's hard to play everybody. You can play more receivers than you can running backs.
There are going to be odd men out at receiver.
Yeah,
right? I mean, of guys that we talked about.
There's going to be a good running back who doesn't get a lot of touches this year.
At least one, and maybe several, depending on what kind of plan they employ there at running back and receiver.
And it also things like you can come in and say we want to have this rotation, or we want to do all this, and then this is like, well, what happened? Like, do you have that many guys? And the second one is also is like, what if there's a guy that's like needs to touch the ball more? Like, you know, sometimes you have a dude like, I think about, obviously a very different case, right? But I think about Trey Mason in 13, and it's like he's in a backfield with Corey Grant, and Cameron Arts Payne was really good that year too, and it's like, man, it's great when you get all three of those guys involved. But also, there was a stretch where it was like, if this ball ain't going to him, it's a problem, and that's how you end up with, you know, 54 carries in the SEC championship game. Sometimes you just have to ride that hot hand.
I want to say the year after Kerryon, there was like talk of all the different running backs on the team in 2018, and who could end up taking hold. And then in the fourth quarter of the opener, it's pretty clear Whitlow is your best option. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, that upsets the apple cart a little bit because you had much bigger recruits and guys who had played more in previous seasons than Jatarvius Whitlow. But suddenly, like, whatever plan you had to share the ball and do a committee, you've got some data now that tells you, and he ended up being number one for most of the season.
And you
got
to also remember, rotations, even at the NFL level, a lot of it is role-based and situation-based. You know, sometimes you're gonna have that guy that's better in passing situations, that's more of your third down back. He might get more carries just because that's what the defense presented, that's what the opportunities presented. There'll be some games where it's like you got into some short yardage situations a little more often, and so you got that between the tackles dude more. And so it's like, you know, I think Auburn's got several guys who could be a standard good running back for you that can move around, but, like, you know, it comes down to every game takes a life of its own, right? I think anybody who's played fantasy football knows, unless you have that kind of bell cow running back, it can just be whatever. Everyone's owned a 49ers running back pre-McCaffrey, where you're just like, all right, maybe it's this guy this week, and like that's somehow how it has to go. It just depends on how the game plays out.
There's a reason that like 8 of the first 10 picks in your fantasy football drafts later this summer are going to be the running backs that touch the ball as often as Justin is talking about. Like, those guys are super valuable when they can demonstrate, you know, that kind of skill.
And there's some really, really good teams that are going to have 3 or 4 running backs get in, and there might be a game where one of those guys gets 20 and the other one gets 4, and it's like, what the heck happened? And it's like, well, the next week it could be flipped. Like, it's just how football goes.
I was going to use Cadillac as another example of a running back where it's like, just think about how great he could be once you figure out the offense. Like, no, Cadillac was great in 2003. Like, if anything, his numbers were actually better in 2003 than they were in 2004, but in 2004, like, Ronnie Brown was healthy the entire year, and you threw the ball, and you weren't in that many close games, and so it's like, he also has a very strong 2004 season, but like there are better examples of a running back who was the only shining light in an offense, and then he gets a chance a year later with a better offense and has an even better season than the one he had before.
Yeah,
and hopefully, I think that's entirely possible for. Even though Jeremiah Cobb had a good season last year, feels like that's a thing that he could accomplish this season.
Again, though, I mean, I'd be surprised if he's a guy that gets 25 carries a game. I mean, I just would. I think there are other guys that can do some things as well. That's heavy usage today, too.
Oh, like, very much so. There might be running backs that get 20. I mean, I would have said Ahmad Hardy, like earlier this week,
he's a guy that we had 25 to 30
as a running back. And Georgia's got a deep room, but Nate Frazier's fantastic. So I mean, I think they've got, you know, some things to think about. But no, I think the possibility is there for a real big season out of Cobb, and then beyond. You were just saying, Justin, like situationally, like the rest of that room. I mean, it's still crazy to think Omar's supposed to be a senior in high school. But we, you know, like that's the thought that he's supposed to be graduating high school this month,
right?
And is instead the most accomplished pass pro running back on an SEC team, and then several guys who have been number ones in their own right. And I know you think that it could be a really important summer for Bryson Washington, sort of to assert his role.
Look, a healthy Bryson Washington is one of the better power guys. Yeah, a healthy Bryson Washington is one of the better power conference running backs in the country these last couple of years.
More accomplished than most guys.
He's got more bulk, and he's got a little more thud between the tackles than a guy like Jeremiah Cobb does, and so it's like it's a good balance to have. Davenport's got that too. Yeah, and Omar Mabson, like you have that, and like that's the thing. You're going back to what we said at the beginning. I think Jeremiah Cobb, as your number one running back, is great. I don't think he needs to be running the Trey Mason, Kerryon Johnson, you know. In the fourth quarter, it's, you know, they're tasting numbers out there.
250 like, carries a season.
Just like, no, that's not a thing. And the thing with him is he's got that.
Play 15 or 16 games.
Nah, that'd be good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You'd be in a good spot.
I can take that.
Yeah. You'd be in a good spot.
Tate had 263 in 2009. I mean, that's a lot.
But also what happened on
everybody used to get the ball more back then, though. Backs carried.
Who else was in that room, though?
Right. Fannin, I think, was the other. Was the other in 2009, and you weren't really running with the quarterback because it's Todd in 2009.
So Omac's not there yet, is he?
He's there in 2009. He's touching a little bit, but still, like it's. I mean, that's heavy.
Yeah, an NFL running back.
Yeah,
compared to not NFL running backs in that room. Yeah.
14 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on the Thursday Drive. We'll get to our final break here of hour number one. Love to hear from you. Thoughts, questions, comments on anything going on in the world of sports. We'll preview Auburn baseball, which is coming up in a couple of hours. Used to it being 6 o'clock. These are 7 o'clock starts tonight and tomorrow night.
I think we might have to check in with Justin Ferguson about his white-hot Atlanta Braves as well.
Drew's ducking
first,
me.
First team to 30.
Drew right. did not show up today.
That's right.
Drew hasn't been here all week. Yeah. All right. We could do that and more as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
War Eagle, this is Coach Larry.
Welcome back in. Final segment of hour number one here on this Thursday. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer.
We talked a lot of Auburn in the first hour, but also hinted at Justin Ferguson's interest in the team leading the major league in wins right now.
Wins, runs scored, runs against, all leaders. And I will point out that since the last time I was on this show, my Atlanta Braves have won series against Dan's team and Drew's team.
But we
Drew is ducking.
And those are considered the other two best teams in the National League, the Dodgers and the Cubs.
Now my team
haven't played Bill's team.
Yeah. My team doesn't.
Which would probably be the other best competition, I would imagine.
Yeah, we don't show up until June or July, generally speaking.
Yeah.
The Braves don't usually either. That's different.
Right.
This is an unusual start.
They have not had a start like this since the peak, the peak years of the Braves, dominating.
How about doing it without Acuna, too?
Without Acuna. You look at that lineup, they're running that out tonight. And the first two games of the Cup Series, they ran it out as well. You look at the lineup they've got right now, and you plug Acuna in for Yaz, who's had a great series, and take him and move him up. It's just that is front to back pretty nasty. Ha-Seong Kim being your nine-hole hitter is you'll live with that. Mm-hmm. It's less fun when your nine-hole hitter is like Jim Jarvis or Jose Azokar. But it's been fun. And to think that the Braves still have a couple arms they feel like could get back soon, within the next couple months, it's a fun.
And the division's such a mess too. The other thing is that if there were a team,
the Phillies have played better since the Phillies made the coaching change,
have played really well since they made the coaching change, and they've made up one game on the Braves.
And the Mets have played better, and better means that they have 18 wins, and the team with the fewest wins in the National League has 17.
Yeah.
But they
also now look like they're a team that might be able to.
They're playing better baseball, and that's the thing is how big of a hole did both those teams dig themselves into? Considering, if you feel like Atlanta is going to keep control of the East. The NL Central is
wide open. It is crazy. Is everybody still over 500? They were just a few days ago.
Yeah, everybody's still over 500, and it's that might be your wild card. And if anybody else can get the Padres, you got the Padres and the Dodgers both out west. If you're in the NL East, if you're the Mets or you're the Phillies, it's you got to come on and because you're in a tough spot. I was running some numbers today. I looked at it. It's kind of crazy thing. You talk about a quick start for Atlanta. If they go one game above 500, so from here on out, they just got to not have a losing record from here on out. It's 90 wins. Mm-hmm. It's probably a playoff spot. It's crazy to think about it.
When you're 17 games over 500,
and they're winning games differently. But you saw it again last night with this Cubs game. I've really liked how aggressive Walt Weiss is. He goes into some of these games. It's just let's just go do it. Last night, J.R. Richie gets into trouble, and ends up giving up a run. He gets into walk trouble, and they're in the fifth inning, and they have to call out a reliever, and he goes with a leverage arm and Tyler Kinley, and just says, "Go ahead and limit the damage, and then put yourself in a good." But I'll tell you what's really fun right now. For Atlanta is if they're hitting the ball and the leads feel good this year. You feel comfortable with leads because Dylan Lee.
Oh yeah,
Dylan Lee, Robert Suarez, Rizal Iglesias.
Once you're in the sixth inning, you're just about.
You get a guy like Kinley, and I'm really interested. He had a great game the other night in game one of this series. Didier Fuentes is a guy that, like, mm-hmm. a long reliever but can give you, like, electric kind of stuff. He reminds me a lot. His stuff reminds me of rookie Strider when they were using him out of the pen, where it was just like, oh, man, this fastball is high 90s. This slider's going all over the place.
Is, like, Fuentes a starter, like, at some point this year? Is that the thinking? Because like, Strider eventually worked his way into the
rotation. It's a really interesting spot that they're in because, to me personally right now, I think – and he had another rough one the other day. I think Grant Holmes is a reliever. Sure, yeah. He gets beat up his second or third time through the order. But you're at a point now where, like, you have Didier Fuentes coming out of the pen. You have Reynaldo Lopez still in the pen right now too, trying to work out some stuff. You could put Holmes back in the pen, but you know Schwellenbach could be, you know, he's starting to ramp up some stuff. Maybe you can get him back in a month or so. You've got a pretty good spot. Last night you see Jose Suarez, who has been pretty good for them in that long relief role out of the pen. So it's been a really fun time. And like, look, for Atlanta, it's like you haven't done like Acuna. You haven't had Acuna with this injury. Hopefully he'll come back here next week, they think. But, hey, Austin Riley, last 10 games, Austin Riley's hitting over 300.
The middle of the lineup, I mean.
And if you had to hand out a National League MVP today, Matt Olson would be.
Yeah, it's Matt Olson. I mean,
it's crazy to think.
The thought of, like, Liam Mix might be in the top five. But the Olsen and Baldwin and Riley in the middle.
Ozzie.
Then Ozzie and Acuna, eventually, like, I mean, there's more to it, but, like, yeah.
When Dominic Smith's probably a 7 or 8 hitter the way he's hit this year, he's leading the majors in batting average, like, that's what you got.
Yep. Thus far, it has really been quite the show.
A lot of fun.
All right, we're halfway done here on the Thursday Drive. We'll step aside for our top of the hour break. Come on in and join us in hour number two.
Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio on this nice-looking Thursday afternoon. We talked some Major League Baseball there at the end of hour number one. SEC Baseball, it is the final weekend starting tonight. Every team in the SEC is going to be playing Thursday through Saturday, and they don't come any bigger than the series at Plainsman Park, which gets underway starting at 7 o'clock tonight on the SEC Network.
Yeah, really fun first hour. If you missed any of it, we'll put the podcast up. But talking a little bit about Justin's sit-down with Auburn men's basketball coach Stephen Pearl, which you can read in the Auburn Observer right now. Also talked a little bit about the outlook for the football team with the season starting up in a couple of months, and then broke down some SEC baseball, some Major League Baseball as well. Fun first hour, and we'll have that up. On the podcast, we'll have that up shortly.
You know, we were talking, and we didn't go into to a ton of detail talking about Auburn, Georgia, but I mean the implications of this series, and I think just about everyone feels both of these teams are national top 8 seeds. And
it's a problem if they're not, I think.
Well, I mean, Georgia's strength of schedule. Georgia has not played nearly as difficult a schedule. Here's the other thing:
have in common with their basketball team.
You know, Georgia has played a total of 14 games away from Athens this year. Now, teams don't play a lot of road games, non-conference road games. Look, Auburn has played 23. I went and looked at that. So 5 road series in the conference gets you 15. And Georgia will have 15 road games after this weekend. But they've only played 2 non-conference games away from Athens this year. That's crazy.
I would say they're both, Auburn and Georgia are both consensus top five teams in projections
right now.
Going into this weekend with the SEC tournament still to play, about 10 days before we get the NCAA tournament bracket. Look, like Baseball America had Auburn 3, Georgia 4. I believe D1 Baseball's projection from earlier today has Auburn at 4 and Georgia at 3.
Yeah. And it's funny. I mean, I've seen projections for the series. Auburn's favored to win this series at Plainsman Park this weekend. But as we said, you don't want to get swept. If you're either team, you don't want to get swept. Now, Georgia, one thing they know is they're the top seed for the SEC tournament, period. I mean, they have wrapped up the SEC. They have a 4.5 game lead with 3 games to play. So they can't lose that. But Auburn, right now, tied for 4th with Alabama because Texas and Texas A&M have played one less game. And folks, if you haven't followed baseball, that's the way it goes. A lot of times, as a matter of fact, most years, everybody doesn't get to play the same number of games. There are going to be games that are postponed and aren't able to be made up, just like this Texas-Texas A&M game. So here's what happens. If Texas or Texas A&M finish with the same number of wins as either Auburn or Alabama or any other team, they're going to get the tiebreaker because they'll have one less loss.
Higher win percentage.
It goes on winning percentage. Yeah. So, yes, that's just the way it is in baseball. Yeah. So it's an advantage to Texas and Texas A&M right now to not have played those games, and a real advantage for Texas because they have Missouri this weekend. So Texas should be your number two seed in Hoover.
It's an advantage to Texas and Texas A&M that they have one fewer loss, right? One of those two teams would have won that game, right? They'd have one
more. And Texas had enough of that series.
Yeah.
Remember, Texas went in with a comfortable lead, it appeared, in the standings. A&M won the first two games. Mm-hmm. It was raining, and Texas said, we got to get home. We can't play.
Yeah. One of those. Yeah.
Texas did not want to get swept. Texas, Jim Schlossnagel did not want to get swept by his former team.
It's raining out.
It was bad weather,
they couldn't play, but still.
What I was going to say is here's the crazy thing. Auburn, we said, I mean, and a lot of people are saying Auburn should still be a top 8 national seed even if they get swept. But if Auburn gets swept, they could drop to 8th in the SEC standings.
Oh, sure.
How crazy would it be to be a top 8 national seed and be the number 8 seed in your own conference tournament? That is how insane the SEC is this year in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the number of SEC teams that are probably going to make up your top 8 in the NCAA tournament bracket. We've said that 4 or 5 SEC teams potentially making up the top 8. 10, 11 could be in your top 16.
Yeah, I think 12 will make the field.
It seems like Kentucky and Tennessee would be the least.
Kentucky, Tennessee, and Oklahoma, those are the 3 that appear to be the lower seeds.
I've seen Arkansas outside the top 16.
But Arkansas is 15 and 12 in the conference. Yeah. So
I mean, Baseball America right now has got, or the D1 Baseball projections got Arkansas at the number 19 overall seeds as one of the best 2 seeds in the field. They've got Jacksonville State as the 2 seed in the Athens Regional.
Yeah, that's the one I was talking about yesterday.
UCF as the 2 seed in Auburn's regional is the number 31 overall team. Huh. And Auburn would be matched up in this bracket. Auburn would be matched up as the 4 seed. They would await the winner of the Morgantown.
The 4 shouldn't get 31. I mean, they usually do a really good job. I guess they're trying to keep it close and then try to regionalize it.
I think it's also like to keep teams from the same conference.
One ought to get 32, 2 ought to get 31.
Because there are a couple SEC teams and some ACC teams.
Yes, to avoid conference rematches.
Yeah, you have to. And I guess they're also thinking about some of it's like a little bit regional to an extent. Auburn would be matched up with the Morgantown West Virginia Regional. West Virginia, the 1 seed as a 13 overall seed. The 2 seed in the Morgantown Regional is the number 17 overall seed. Again, they had to tinker with this because of this is in this projection.
Uh-huh.
Coastal Carolina.
Coastal
up to 17.
Ooh, I didn't realize that were there. So they were that close. They're that close to hosting.
Yeah, and I think that's a team you pay attention to where they end up in the bracket.
Hope they're not in yours. That's right. Yeah. So it's going to be fun at the ballpark. We talked about it. Seniors and their families will be honored tonight. And then tomorrow night, Josh Donaldson being honored. Sunday, Rod Bramblett will have the
Saturday.
The radio Saturday. I know. The final day of the series. No. Yeah, I don't think it's going to rain Saturday. Saturday, the radio booth, the home radio
cool
booth will be named for Rod Bramlett.
Yeah, so that's dedications tonight for the seniors, tomorrow for Josh Donaldson, Saturday for Rod, and that's just yeah. And I saw that there were still some GA tickets available.
There always are some some of the. What do they call them?
But I think they were moving fast today. Yes. So I mean, if you get the chance, yeah, check out baseball at Plainsman Park this weekend. Last home,
Tiger Terrace.
Last home series of the season of the regular season. Mm-hmm. Probably not the
Auburn
last.
Auburn will play another. They will play at home again.
Yeah, probably not.
That is not a very bold prediction. Yeah. I mean, Auburn's going to be one of the top 16 seeds no matter what.
And postseason baseball is a blast. Last year, mm-hmm. Plainsman Park was rocking. Hopefully you get something similar.
Yeah, tickets went on sale yesterday for the regional and super regional, so for season ticket holders. So go ahead and grab those. I need to see when the deadline is because I didn't order them yesterday. So we will be doing that.
So Auburn going with
Jake Marciano tonight. Again, Georgia's going to throw three righties, and Jason and Adam yesterday talking about the fact that Georgia a little different. I mean, they don't bring a lot of power arms there. There are a lot of breaking balls, right-handers that throw breaking balls, which at times can be problems for Auburn, sort of like the guy Tuesday night for Jack State.
We get an update from the critically acclaimed Adam Cole of the Montgomery Advertiser, uh-huh. who points out on social media that the injury report. Missing both Ethan Bingaman and Chase Frelick.
It sounded like yesterday when we talked with Butch Thompson for a little bit that they were both going to practice, and I mean so banged up a little bit. Look, a lot of people are banged up by the end of a regular season, but good news that Chase will be behind the plate and Ethan will be at first base.
Tell you what, some of the teams Auburn's been facing have gotten binged up, Bill.
Especially down the stretch. He has really gotten hot down the stretch.
Yeah,
you remember he hit those two homers out in Texas.
Right? Oh yeah, had the big one against Missouri earlier in the season. Then
he hadn't hit, and then now he's coming on. He's really driving the ball now.
Crushed that. It was a laser too. The home run in Game 3 of the state series that blew the game open.
Gonna be really interesting. Georgia comes in with 140 home runs on the season in 52 games. And but like I said a while ago, they've only played 14 games away from Athens, so that ballpark is very conducive to home runs. So we'll see. Now Auburn lately has given up some dingers. A lot of them have been solo shots. But I mean Jake Marciano. I mean I ought to pull up the stats. Jake's given up a few homers this year. The key for Auburn is not to allow. I mean if Georgia hits one. Just hope there aren't multiple men on base, because that's where Georgia can pile them up in a hurry with the way they're really swing the way they swing the bat. So a great matchup, the statistically the best hitting team in the country against the best pitching team in the country, definitely in the SEC. I mean Auburn's the only team in the league with an ERA under 4 as a team.
Excited to see what it looks like this weekend. Auburn Sports Network will have the coverage starting around 6:30 or
6:45.
6:45 tonight for Game 1 of Auburn-Georgia. Last home series of the year, the regular season for Auburn baseball. Like Bill said, likely that there will be more postseason baseball, will be more baseball to be played at Plainsman Park this year.
334-321-1390. Are you headed out to the ballpark this evening? Should be a great night for baseball. Could be a little cool before it's done. Don't see many clouds out there. That means the temperature is going to drop quickly. So you might want to bring a light jacket or something like that. I would imagine. Imagine my wife's got the blanket that she'll be bringing for the ball game tonight.
And of course, Steve Witten writing us about this, but. Wings 94.3, where you can catch the Auburn Sports Network. I thought I mentioned that.
We mentioned it a couple of times.
We love Wings 94.3.
Oh yeah.
Might need to play the game that sweep of the nation a little bit later on, Justin. The Wings 94.3 game. Might need to see what's going on our pals over on Wings a little bit later on.
All right, I just pulled up the Auburn stats. I knew he'd given up a few. Jake Marciano with his he has such a deceptive record because he's left ball games where he's pitched really well and hasn't either gotten a decision or hasn't gotten the win. He's 4-4 on the season, but a 2.71 earned run average and a 0.97 whip, and only 54 hits and 13 walks. So just 67 base runners there in his 69 and two-thirds innings for that whip under one. But he's given up 11 homers in those 69 innings. So Jake needs to make sure that he doesn't, give any free passes out tonight, because Georgia is going to be swinging from the heels as they always do. So should be fun at the ballpark tonight. What a great atmosphere it should be.
Yeah, I mean, for a team but Georgia's locked up the regular season title. Like, I mean, there won't even be a tie. I mean, that was something that we were watching for that last weekend. If they'd faltered in Baton Rouge, if LSU had been able to take a game or two in that series. And LSU got close on
– LSU led, yeah. And at least they may have led all three games. They led in a couple of the ball games over the weekend.
But ultimately, not enough, and Georgia locks up the regular season title at home last weekend. But Auburn with a chance to make another statement against the kind of team, and I think 2 weeks in a row, they faced the kind of team you're going to see in – super regionals. Like, State and A&M are both super regional good this year. Maybe Omaha good. You're going to face another team that good this weekend.
Georgia has, I'm looking at their stats now. They have six players with at least 13 homers, two others with eight. So they have eight players with at least eight homers, led by Daniel Jackson, who is about to win the Triple Crown in the SEC this year. How about this for a catcher? Catcher hitting .384 with 25 homers, 74 RBIs. He's also 24 of 25 base stealing.
Now, is that the Triple Crown for the whole season or for the SEC for just SEC play?
That is for the SEC.
That's SEC play. SEC. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. Because there's somebody out there that's hit 38.
Because I don't think
for some school.
Because I don't think Charlie Condon, for the great season he had at UGA a couple years ago. He didn't win the Triple Crown. Someone beat him out in RBIs. I think he won the batting title and led the league in homers, but didn't, like, not even Condo.
Yeah. So Jackson, by the way, I would say he's probably not coming back next year. He's a junior. So I would think he will get. I mean,
how about this? He's not even the best catcher prospect in his own state. That kid from Tech.
Yeah,
a kid from Tech. I saw could go two in this draft if they think the kid from UCLA is going one.
Yep,
I believe
that George, I know Auburn fans saw them up close, but like that Georgia Tech team is unreal talented.
Yeah. And a likely top three seed in the super regional field as well. I think Brent Rooker was your last Triple Crown in the SEC.
Wow,
going back to state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very impressive for anybody to be able to do that. Jackson, by the way, started his career at Wofford before he transferred back into his home state. He's from Sandy Springs.
This would just be the third time a player has won the Triple Crown in SEC play if DJ can pull it off.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I'd be interested in a catcher that's got that combo of power and speed.
Absolutely.
Also hit .380 to boot. We'll get to our first break of hour number two.
Brent Rooker's done okay in the pros, right? Yeah. A couple All-Star games and some homers. Yeah.
Come on in and join us. You got any questions, thoughts, comments? We'll talk a little bit more, get some more of the thoughts from Ferg about his comments with Stephen Pearl. Anything you want to talk about, though, come on in here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon, 21 minutes after 5 o'clock. Bill, Dan, and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, who, in case you weren't with us in hour number one, shame on you. I mean, Justin had some great info from
just because you had to work.
Yeah.
Huh? Oh, yeah, yeah, really. What excuse is that? From a one-on-one opportunity he had with Stephen Pearl, so much that you've made it into a two-parter, right?
Yes. We talked for about an hour. So a lot of stuff. When I first plugged in, so I record my interviews on my phone now, and Apple, if you do voice memos, it can give you a transcript, mm-hmm. just a rough one to right. work with. So I do that, and I copy and paste it into my computer. And the first run, I was like, oh, that's 7,000 words. Mm-hmm. I'm going to need to cut this thing down. So, yeah, it was a really good time, though. You know, talked a lot about lessons learned in year one, how they wanted to address them for year two, what that meant going into the transfer portal. We talked about some individual guys, talked about the decision. We didn't talk about this much in the first hour. The Tahad Pettiford return, hearing his side of what that process was like, because I approached it from the angle of, like, look, nationally, and I even think some in Auburn, too, people thought he was good as gone.
Oh, not only that.
It was a foregone conclusion that he was gone.
There was also, I mean, and I don't want to overblow it. I don't want to make it sound like it was a bigger movement than it was.
There's a faction of Auburn fans that didn't necessarily want him back.
Yeah, that wanted to see Auburn replace Tahad Pettiford with a different point guard.
Yeah, you're
good
right.
Good luck.
Yeah, but I think the larger number was people that just didn't think he was coming back because you'd talk and it'd be, well, the possibility of bringing these three back, and it wouldn't include Tahad. Mm-hmm. You know?
No. Yeah. And so I asked him about that, and he said, first and foremost, he said, the thing you got to understand is that Tahad Pettiford really likes Auburn. He really likes being at Auburn. He likes the school. He likes the fan base. He likes being here.
Had a chance to leave last year
and
didn't.
And enjoys it. He mentioned, he said, look, if we don't play in the NIT, we don't get Tahad back and we don't get Kevin Overton back. Like, we have said that. As like, probably not, but like, to hear the head coach like, yeah, that's not happening.
And you look at who else is returning yep. or not returning from the roster. It's like, if you don't get those two guys back, right. maybe one of those other guys would have stayed. Maybe. But like, or you're starting over in yep. year two with a completely new roster.
The third thing he said was, he said when they were in the negotiating process of like with Tahad and like saying he wanted to come back. He said, I want to come back. I love Auburn. He said, but here's the thing. I got to win. We need to win. Mm-hmm. He said, I want to get back to a Final Four. I want to win another championship. And so Steven explained, like, from their perspective, they went to him and said, look, here's who we're going to go get. Here's who we're looking to get. We're going to build this thing around you and KO. And here are the players we think can get us to that level again. And here's the type of players we're going to try to bring in because we think they fit with you and we think we fit with what they want to do. And he gave an interesting insight on Tahad Pettiford. He said when they were in the process of negotiating with him and saying, like, here's the team we're going to build around you. Because that was one of his things. He's like, can we have a team that can win?
Yep.
When they said they were building a team around him, Stephen Pearl said they gave him film of guys they were going after in the portal. And he said Tahad watched every single one of those film.
They wanted input from Tahad.
They wanted him to say, here are the guys we think could fit with you. What do you think? And obviously it all worked out. One of the other interesting things they talked about in this process is, like, you know, you don't get everybody you want in the portal, right? Stephen Pearl made a point that I had not even realized. Auburn had five guys on campus in the portal, all five of them signed. Like all five of the visits, all
wow.
signed.
Yeah. And he I said, mean, that's impressive. But yeah, I was thinking we hadn't heard about other guys that were on.
You had heard, hey, they were looking at like a Dwayne Aristotle. Hey, they're looking at, you know, X, Y, and Z. The guys they brought onto campus, and he had said, now he said this recently, that Kevin Overton was a big recruiter for them. And he also gave some insight about how Tahad, you know, was, you know, influential in just saying, okay, you know, here's the guys we're looking at. What do you think? And, like, how do you think these guys play? And if you look, because we go in deeper in part two about Buki Oboye and Narcisse Ngoi, and those two guys, I think, are centers that perfectly make sense with Tahad. If you have Tahad Pettiford as your point guard, those two guys make a ton of sense as your centers because of the way they play. And, you know, I asked him about Buki Oboye, and he gave an interesting point about a little anecdote about Buki Oboye. He said when they were getting in the NIT, they were getting ready to play Seattle. And he said, I'm watching Seattle film, and I watched the Santa Clara game because Santa Clara was one of the only teams that could score well on Seattle all year. And he's watching the Santa Clara. He's like, all right, what did Santa Clara do? Like, what worked? What did they do to answer this defense because they've been so good all year? And he said he started watching film, and he sees the center for Santa Clara, and he goes, this kid is unbelievable. And he's like, if this guy goes in the portal, we got to go get him. And when his name got into the portal, he said, I was already a fan. We went all in on getting him. Because they really like how he – like he, his fit with Tahad makes so much sense. Rim runner, lob threat. He led the nation in two-point field goal percentage. But also, he's got that – he's a good rebounder. He's a great rim protector, all that. And one of the interesting things about Bukayo Boye that I'm interested in seeing coming up this year, I think – not the same type of player. I think he's got a Keyshawn Murphy level of potential as a shooter. Like, his numbers and his form and, like, just the way he shoots the ball from the perimeter and the free throw line reminds me of Mississippi State Keyshawn Murphy. Keyshawn Murphy comes to Auburn and has the best shooting numbers of his career.
Right.
And I think they see a lot of that kind of build in him. Obviously, you love what he can do down low, but, like, he could stretch, man. He's got some stretch to him, and that's pretty fun to see because he's, you know, 7'1" with a 7'6" wingspan.
What do you know about Narcisse? Because that's a guy to me where it's like
– bulldozer.
And evaluating him is slightly more challenging.
Yeah.
Because
– and we talked about that. We talked about how you evaluate guys who don't play college basketball and what that looks like. And it's a lot of homework.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of trust in the eye test. He tries to dunk everything, and he's a very physical, like he is a bulldozer down there.
If you can make that work, trying to dunk everything is not the worst.
Yeah, when you're 7'1" and you can do that, and he's like, look, the level of competition is going to be tougher. He's going to have to adjust to the speed of this game. He's going to have to get in the weight room and adjust to like what it takes physically to play in this level. But they really like the fact that at the rim, he is a menace on offense and on defense. His defensive, I mean, where I think Bukayo Boye is a good, like, secondary rim protector, like a guy who can come across and you know, help side stuff. He's long. He's got a good first step. Like, he's pretty athletic. He can get into foul trouble sometimes. He's not very bulky. Like, he's a thinner center. Narcisse Ngoi is a, like, that's an anchor. That is a dude you can plant right at the basket and say, affect everything that comes down here. And so I think it's a fun dichotomy they have. And then when you throw in a guy like Owen Freeman, who, if healthy, is going to do, I think, a lot of stuff on offense that they liked out of Jani Broome. And then, you know, when he was healthy in the past, I think defensively he can give you some value. Probably going to be a guy who's going to play a big four for you more often than not this season.
Did he say anything about – because Freeman's one of those guys where – I guess Kimball – is another one. I know Kimball was practicing in full, but like, did he offer anything about like
injury wise?
Yeah, the thought of like how ready
this didn't make this didn't make the interview kind of like the stuff with about the wing hunt that they're still on. This didn't make the interview, but the sense I got from talking with them was, they feel good about those guys. Sure. It's just a matter of getting healthy and staying healthy, and that summer's going to be big for both of those guys, staying healthy, but also getting stronger, getting back into game shape. He said with Kimball recently, when we were in Montgomery, he said he's at 100%. We need him at 110% because he missed the season. Freeman, the vibe I get from Auburn about Freeman is, look, if he's what he is at Iowa, we feel like we got a steal.
Oh, no kidding.
An all conference
and
type of big.
And you don't want to sit and throw out everything that happened at Creighton because it matters, and like, he's got to get back to that. But like, he, you know, they're looking at him and like, hey, here's what healthy Owen Freeman looks like, and we need to get him to be at that level. And again, when you have Thomas Dowd in, when you have, you know, the ability to play Adam Olsen at the four if you want to, when you have two true centers, 2 7-footers on your roster as well, you're not having to say, hey, if Owen Freeman's not Iowa Owen Freeman, you're toast. So that's a kind of big thing for them. Really complimentary of George Kimball as well. I think they really think that he is going to be a difference maker for them. They like his combo guard skill set on offense, and they like that he's about that work on the defensive end, which is a really good sign.
And obviously, you know, plan A is a healthy and productive season from Tahad and a healthy and productive season from Kevin Overton.
And you play both of those guys 30 to 35 minutes a game, you're good, but you're going to need Kimball to And I think he's got the game. Like, you go watch him at Eastern Kentucky, he was the guy and was a really good combo player.
And I can't help but think that, like, they brought Simon Walker back for a reason.
Oh, yeah.
There's going to be some.
And Simon Walker has said, you know, Pearl had the story the other day where he's saying, like, Simon Walker told Stephen Pearl, he said, I want to be the first guy who plays all 4 years for you. Mm. And, you know, that's – they knew that coming in, like he had that kind of potential. But
– could be all 5 years by the time. Good
point. The other thing there is just, like, when we were talking about in the first hour, you get these guys that you know you're going to develop, but there's no guarantee that you keep them, yeah. Right? Auburn just
right.
had three yeah. of those guys leave. Mm-hmm. But they really like – They like Walker, and Walker, this is home for him, and he wants to be at Auburn.
I don't know where you are on, like, what the perfect system looks like as far as player movement and college basketball's mm-hmm. eligibility and everything. Like, I don't get bothered by – we had a call earlier this week. Like, I'm not as bothered by, oh, he's on his fourth team in 4 years or his fifth team.
I don't love
like,
it.
I don't love – but seniors moving around doesn't bother me as much as I hate seeing the guy – leave after 1 year to yeah. go switch to a different school, or the guy leave after.
I think the free one transfer was a good system, and it just couldn't hold up legally. Sure. And you know, unless we get into a point now where you can sign kids to
multi-year
deals mm-hmm. and they're you know ironclad like that kind of stuff, I think this is just how it's going to mm-hmm. be. I think no sports league on the planet lets everybody be a free agent after every year. So why does college mm-hmm. athletics have to do that? So there's some of that where you have to kind of swallow your pride.
Because there are no agreements.
Right. You have to swallow your pride, and you have to swallow your stance, your morality or whatever, and just say, this is semi-professional, if not full-blown professional sports. We have got to mm-hmm. treat it like that mm-hmm. and go from there. And I think it's a unique system, right? You know, like – you know, in college football and college basketball, men's and women's, you know, the revenue sports that you would call them in there, they're in a unique spot because the professional leagues in this country don't, like, you could go be a really good baseball player, you know, and go pro right away. You have that right to. Overseas and soccer and all these other sports, you play coming out of high school. In fact, you go through the academy system a lot of times.
There's not a professional option,
but for
out of high school
for football, there's definitely not a professional option. And for basketball, they did the straight out of high school rule, and it had some success, but you know,
very. I mean,
it was not as popular.
Exceptional players.
You had to be the best of the best, and mm-hmm. I think there's also because of how big basketball is. And you see this definitely in the women's game. How big basketball is at this point is that there are only so many people who can play in the NBA. There's only so many roster spots. And there's so much more people who are good enough to keep playing basketball at a high level
and
for
they need
money.
To be, but the thing is, they need to be playing, too.
Yes.
It's better for them to be playing than it is hoping that they're going to get a chance to play. And,
right,
and
yeah.
Maybe
no.
making a team
and
never
so,
getting to play.
And so because of that, it's like since you can't be professional when you're 18 to 22 for the most part, for the majority of guys in these sports, these guys and girls in these sports, you have to create a professional option because every other league in the world has that ability. If you're good enough to play baseball professionally as an 18-year-old, you can. Soccer, you do it from the time you're six.
The lack of real professional options for high school basketball players
yeah.
and the attempt to establish some competition to college basketball – I think it moved the needle in getting NIL.
Yeah, and
the,
like the and, fact that the then college OT. Basketball said, "Okay, yeah. we are a sport. We are a league that brings in a lot of money. So let's use this money mm-hmm. and yeah, just call it professional.
They
call,
didn't think of it on their own. That's not what
no,
they
no,
want.
No, no, no,
that's not what
but like but
they saw,
like,
they saw,
said,
they saw,
yeah,
Jay, they saw Jalen Green pick the G League Elite yeah. and say, "Oh boy,
yeah. that's right."
But like football is kind of funny though because it's like, how many guys are NFL ready out of high school? Maybe a dozen
yeah.
ever,
yeah.
like,
ever.
Like ever.
Right.
Like I think Jadeveon Clowney could have made it, but that's probably one of the few.
It's very
Leonard
yeah,
Fournette
very
probably could have.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of like true freshman. I remember watching where it's like, oh, he could maybe play in the NFL right now.
I think Jeremiah Smith's going to be that
Johnson,
guy.
Adrian Peterson had moments like
but again,
that.
But again, yeah.
these are very rare.
Yeah,
very rare.
So you need that, and college football can handle it. Basketball just needs to kind of get in that line too.
We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Got a couple of segments left. Still plenty of time for you to join in if you'd like here on the Thursday drive. Start. Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Yes, it is Thursday. I've had trouble with this all, you know, baseball's going Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and it is Thursday. I don't know what it is. It's just old brain, I guess. I don't know.
It's retirement, right? You used to have to keep the days.
I've got so much crap I've been doing, though. It's like no idea what day it is.
But the days were very important when you were at work.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like what day it was.
Absolutely.
It impacted your schedule.
Thank God tomorrow's Friday. Let's do we have a caller?
We do have a caller. Brett is hanging on. What's up, buddy?
Hey, guys. Heard y'all talking about Owen Freeman. I know he had gotten hurt, but was he out of shape? Because his numbers weren't that bad for 11.9 minutes a game.
No.
I didn't know if.
Yeah, he just never really, I don't think he could hold up, you know, for much longer than that. He hurt his knee real bad over the summer. And I think he just couldn't get much more than that minutes wise on that knee, and then he ended up kind of falling out of the Creighton rotation altogether at a couple points in the year.
Well, that's not because you know he averaged 5 points and 4 rebounds in almost 12 minutes a game. So I mean,
yeah, he averaged close to 30 minutes a game, and you're a double double guy. You're 15 and 12 or something. Yeah.
And he also I was answering the phone when Justin explained some of this, so I apologize if I repeat what Justin said. But he was extremely limited all summer, like tore his meniscus,
and basically slow summer,
basically did not practice.
That was his Iowa injury.
Not practice with the team in the offseason is the version.
So he was just kind of behind the eight ball, and never really got going.
Okay, I mean, have you heard any scoop on that? I mean, like, is he? Seem like he's healthy.
Yes, they feel like he was able to practice fully at Creighton. It was kind of, you know, he wasn't out. He didn't miss time because he was hurt and couldn't play. I think it was just he wasn't at full speed. They have pretty good optimism that he's going to be able to get going like that in the summer.
I think the summer threw off his conditioning, and then he was out there struggling to keep up when he was asked to play like. Significant stretches for Creighton.
Right. Okay. All right, guys. Have a great evening.
Appreciate it, Brett.
Yeah, because they had high hopes. If you remember, Creighton and Auburn faced off in the NCAA tournament during Auburn's run to the Final Four, and Creighton had that big Kalkbrenner, and the thinking was Freeman was going to be
add a 6'10 guy to that.
He was a big part of replacing Kalkbrenner. Mm-hmm. The thought was like, all right, Kalkbrenner's going pro.
Right.
Like Creighton's going to go into the portal and get this big from Iowa, who had just had an impressive season at Iowa until things took a turn. But injuries injuries disrupted that entire plan. And I'm sure Freeman's hoping for he's hoping for a fresh
Freeman
start.
Freeman and Auburn are really hoping for that.
Yeah.
334-321-1390. Back to the phones we go. Who's next?
Tex is calling in, making sure that the baseball series is Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Bill, don't apologize for being old. This old guy.
Well, there's no reason to. There's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah, well, this old guy's schedule is built out every 2 months, and he put it down as being able to leave tomorrow at 10 a.m. and head to Auburn for the first game of the series 2 months ago. And I just assumed it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So that's why I'm missing tonight, and somebody's the beneficiary of sitting in my seat. So
And they appreciate it greatly.
he was very nice about it. So it's just
he did remind me that he needed one extra for Sarah, though.
Yeah, well, he said daughters. So I figured you were on the hook for one, too.
Well, that's fine. That's fine. I can still get in.
As I perused some articles earlier today, it is amazing to me how many people are picking us to win 2 out of 3.
Right.
And win this weekend. So it's I think we've got a really good shot, especially at home. I'm not overly worried about what happened at Jacksonville State. They really see a team in this situation. Maybe looking really forward to Thursday, Friday, Saturday, mm-hmm. way more than they were Tuesday. So Ed, I expect them to play well, and I hope I would rather them win Friday Thursday and Friday than to wait and win. Well, I'll be there Friday and Saturday. I wouldn't mind those 2 wins either. So it's good. It should be fun. It's going to be really good. I don't, as a longtime Georgia resident raised there, I don't particularly care for the Bulldogs. You know, it's most of the people I grew up with are all Georgia Bulldog fans, and they're already starting to shoot some text messages my way. And most of them can't spell baseball, so they don't know a whole lot about it.
Emoji heavy text messages from the Georgia fans.
Yes, well, no, they say, "Are you ready for your next loss?" They don't even know what sport we're playing. Anyway, so they're kind of excited about it all of a sudden. People that I talk to on a regular basis who hadn't said anything about baseball for 35, 40 years.
I'll tell you what, Tex, you get a catcher on the verge of the Triple Crown, right, Bill? Like that'll get you excited.
Yeah, should.
Yep, exactly. So anyway, looking forward to it. And then the other part, Bill, I heard you mention Brother Man. There was a little bit of good news put out on social media today too. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I saw earlier where he said today wasn't the best day. I think that was early, but I hadn't seen anything since.
He actually had put out that 4 days in a row he was feeling good, so that may be a day old. So,
okay.
You know, I'm
always, you know, a dollar short. So yeah, why not?
I'm not the most technologically sound individual either. So I'm the one that put the wrong phone number in to do a transfer of tickets.
Yeah, I'm just glad they didn't accept. When I saw that, I was like, man, somebody going, hey, okay, I'll turn around and sell those babies.
That area code is really – well, how would they? The area code is West Louisiana that I put.
I'm sure they could sell them somewhere out there on the internet. If I got gifted a couple of tickets like that, I guarantee you I could find a local website that I could post something on to see if somebody was interested.
Well, that was – again, technology is not my forte. I do numbers. I just don't do technology. So one last thing is I'm really, really just proud of the way this team has continued to fight. When you've watched baseball teams and people have gone sideways on a few of their losses against them and just saying, you know, how could they play like that? Well, baseball is a game of failure. If you hit 300, you go into the Hall of Fame in the big leagues.
Yeah, it's a season of a lot of games. It's not a dozen games like football or even, you know, 30-something like basketball. It's you know, 56 if you can get them all in the regular season.
Absolutely. And one last thing, talking about a pro organization of the way the money and everything is being handled through NIL. The biggest mistake in that, and I think you guys made a very good point about this, is the money these young people are getting is life-changing money, and they have no idea how to change their life. Because they're going to spend it all. And it's a shame that we're not taking time to make it contractual so they don't jump from school to school. And, yeah, maybe you can – it has to be a minimum of 2 years. It can't be a one-year contract. But they need to learn how to handle the money. Too many pro athletes, their heroes that they want to be, are bankrupt because they don't know how to handle money. Mm-hmm. And unless we change that cycle – it's going to only get worse because we're paying an exorbitant amount of money.
To less mature people than the pro athletes.
Correct. And let me just tell you, you're talking to somebody that when we used to travel, we ate for $7.15.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you got. So we learned how to spend the money. You know, when you would go into Coach Nix's favorite restaurant, Piccadilly or Morrison's, you had $7.15, and unless somebody gave you extra money or you had extra money, you couldn't go over that. So it was at least the money we were given as we walked in, we had to use in a way that was the right way to use it and learned how to use the money. Not that that was a big paycheck that we got or anything, but I can only imagine. I just can't understand why we cannot get a hold of this and make it contractual so they don't jump everywhere. And it's just like stealing money. It really is. If they're really good out of high school, we're going to take them and pay them a lot of money, and we're not going to hold them accountable. And we're not going to help them change their lives, which is, I always thought that's what coaches always say. They're trying to make men out of young people. And I think we're missing the missing the bar here. Sorry, didn't mean to preach.
No, great. Let's go tonight. I completely agree with you, Tex. Great stuff.
Yes. All right. Let's win tonight, and I'll see y'all tomorrow. I'll be in 106.
All right, take care on the way in.
All right. All right, thanks.
We need to get to our final break. I believe we've got time for another call or two when we come back here on the Thursday Drive.
Don't buy the lie. This is Lee County District Attorney Jessica Venturi with
Get Back to the Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, final segment here on this Thursday, and Anthony is up next on The Drive Hotline. Hey, Anthony.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Hey, buddy.
You know, the last call of Texas, he was talking about NIL money and how it should be invested. You know, I've sat around and got a legal pad out, and I played around, you know, if I was playing ball now and they was paying money, how I can invest in ETFs and index funds and Walmart stock and Coca-Cola stock and Apple and all this kind of stuff. You know, if I had $4 or $5 million coming in after taxes or whatever, just illustrate my point since we on the radio, that I would invest every dime, maybe except for $100,000. You know, just keep me out $100,000 from my budget over the next 4 or 5 years and for my personal expenses, and invest all of it. But, you know, when you have people that have not been exposed to getting in the market,
right,
buying into that stuff I just talked about, you might mention it to them and try to talk to them about it, but you're not going to sell that to a lot of people.
No. And you know, Anthony, I mean, for some, the first time they see that amount of money, they feel like, well, that's a bottomless pit. You know, I can spend and spend and spend. I'm still going to have more because it seems that way early on.
And then, you know, a lot of guys say, well, I can play around with the NIL money and test the waters with it. I'm talented enough that I'll probably make it to the NFL if I don't get hurt. And then maybe I might get serious with money and then at that point and start doing maybe the right thing with it. But, I mean, you know, they could bring in financial advisors or whatnot and talk to these guys and show them a model that they can invest their money. But then it's up to them whether they want to invest their money at that point. But like I said, a lot of times when you had not been exposed to certain things like that, then you're not going to trust it. You're not going to fool with it. You're just going to go with what you know, and that just spend money.
That's right. Great point, Anthony. Yeah, we're getting short on time, but no, he's absolutely right about that. It's it sounds great,
yeah,
but it's it's something that just sort of falls on deaf ears many times. Before we're out of time, let everybody know. I mean, what else you got coming up with the Observer and how folks can get it?
Yeah, auburnobserver.com. You can check out that 2-part interview we had with Stephen Pearl. A lot of good stuff there for Auburn basketball fans. I did a story earlier this week on did a more of a deep dive because I hadn't really gotten into him too much. I mean, he was talked about a ton, you know, during spring ball. But Cody Sigler dug into some of his numbers at Arkansas State and kind of the hype around him. Henry Patton's been covering baseball for us. He had a really good bracketology update earlier this week. He's going to have live updates from Plainsman throughout the weekend that you can check out on the site. And then Dan and I are about to go record a podcast. We're going to do the mailbag this week on the podcast side. I got some fun questions there. So all that'll roll out tomorrow morning, auburnobserver.com. Check it out.
Great stuff. Thanks again. Always great to have Ferg here in the studio. Music's playing. That means we're out of time here on the Thursday Drive. Don't forget, 6:45, Wings 94.3. That's the pregame. 7 o'clock first pitch. We're back tomorrow to recap that and more. Coach Don Dunn will be in, so look forward to that. We're out of time here on the Thursday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.